Another Concordia record is threatened. Some Bulldogs make news at Nationals, and pardon the pun, but outdoor track is officially off and running. Hello and welcome to episode 39 of Talking Dogs. I'm Cohen Carpenter here with Kai Ulbrich. Kai, how you doing?
Doing good. It's a Friday. It's a pretty nice Friday, and we have some Bulldogs doing some great things, so can't complain about this week so far.
The baseball team would beg to differ. The game today got postponed, but we'll break that down when we get to the baseball section.
Yes, early weekend for them.
Yeah, right. Oh, what doesn't postpone a baseball game?
Seems like they'll take any excuse not to play.
It was funny that our only two 80-degree weather days this past month, and that we've had since like the past 6 months, were the 2 days that baseball played a doubleheader.
Right.
It was that Friday when it was really nice and 80.
Yep.
And that's when they played Waldorf. So I took note of that.
Definitely. The good weather at least seems to follow them somewhat. I guess 40 degrees with no wind is a little too cold for them today.
Yeah, right. A bit. They're pushing it.
They even get to wear pants while they play.
Yeah, well, you don't want the boys to get hurt out there. It's a tough sport, tough sledding. Talking about fair weather sports, how about we get started with softball and then we can get into some of the baseball news, because I know both these sports have their predations when it comes to the weather.
Yes, so softball, they've had a lot of games since our last episode, 6 to be exact. They've gone 4-2 in those games.
There you go.
They're now sitting at 20-10 on the season, 5-3 in the GPAC. So, like we've been mentioning all year, much better than their previous season. They're doing really good things. They're at well over 500.
Yeah, I think last year they were probably middling around 500, if not a few games below.
At the end of the season, they were at 500. They had a much worse start. They were sitting at like 400, 300.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're doing great this year, especially compared to the previous one. We're seeing some themes come out of these last three doubleheader series. One of the big ones has been in pitching. Megan Yurich and Kaylee Dennison have pretty much been splitting pitching duties.
Okay.
So it's usually first game of the series, Megan will be pitching, then second game, Kaylee will be pitching. That's how it kind of panned out this whole series, except for one little hiccup from Megan. Say the first series was against Hastings, where they went 1-1. Second one was against Briarcliff, where they won both of those. And then the third one was against number 22 ranked Midland, where they took one off of them.
There you go.
So to start off with the Hastings series, it's a rough start for the week for our softball team. Lost 4-0.
Yeah, not great.
Megan, she pitched that first game, gave up 8 hits, 4 runs, struck out 6 though, so not too bad of a day for her. The big issue was not the pitching or the defense, it was really the hitting.
Yep, you need run support.
We only had 4 hits throughout the whole game.
It's rough.
No runs. Just not getting it done from the batter's box.
Hats off to their pitcher.
Definitely. And we'll, in the Midland series, we'll take both of our metaphorical hats off to their pitcher.
Because
did something special. But second game against Hastings, kind of turned around the hitting slump, ended up winning 11-5.
This was a doubleheader?
This was a doubleheader, yep. So Dennison, she ended up pitching that second game. She gave up 5 runs on 12 hits. It's kind of funny how that works for pitchers. You know, Megan gives up 4 runs. Kaylee gives up 5 runs.
That's baseball/softball.
Megan gets a loss. Kaylee gets a win.
Yep.
Thanks to a little bit of help from the batters. Hit count was really even throughout the whole game. Concordia had 13 hits. Hastings had 12. We ended up converting 11 runs off of those 13 hits. Hastings only had 5 off of their 12. So either, you know, some better fielding from us or maybe just better timing on those hits.
Yep, clutch hitting.
Yep, so maybe a little bit of both as well. We kind of clumped up our runs. We had 4 runs in the 4th inning and then 5 runs in the 9th inning.
Wow.
And then one run in 2 of the other innings.
It's interesting. Didn't last time we were talking about this, we said that they had bad first games of doubleheaders and then they had good second games of doubleheaders?
That is what it seemed like, especially hitting-wise.
That's interesting. Maybe we have to examine our warm-up routine a little better.
I think so. We come into the first one a little bit cold.
Yeah.
And maybe as the weather warms up, the first game will get a little bit better.
We need the good people of Seward to show up for the opening game. Stop
Definitely.
Trickling into the third inning.
Get there right at 3 o'clock, not at 6 p.m.
There's a nearby Air Force base in Lincoln, right? We can maybe request a flyover or two to get the girls psyched up.
I like it. We can do some of those. We can do a flyover with white and blue.
Yeah, with
like
the
smoke.
With the smoke trails.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Hey, make a few phone calls.
All for the GPAC softball standings.
We'll use that big budget they give us to hire a flyover.
Yeah, that massive Concordia budget.
The big paycheck.
Pay for the B2 bombers.
Yep, pretty much. But while the runs were clumped up pretty heavily in a couple innings, the hitting was very spread out between the players. Only two RBIs was the most for a player in this game, and we had 9 total RBIs for our 11 runs. Yep. Most players were getting one, maybe two, but no one really standing out as the big slugger in that lineup.
Like to see it. But it's a good sign. That's
yes,
good sign.
Definitely. Everyone can get the job done. But then moving on to the Briarcliff series, 7-6 first game, and then 8-3 second game. So this was really the first time we've seen Megan Urich a little bit flustered throughout this whole season.
Yeah, 7-6 is a shootout.
Yeah, so she actually gave up 6 runs in the first 4 innings off of 8 hits and then got relieved by Taryn Ganstrom.
Interesting.
So she got pulled after 4. Ganstrom,
she came in, pitched the last three,
kept Briarcliff scoreless throughout those 3 innings, and then Ganstrom ended up getting the win because we took the lead while she was pitching.
Hats off to Ganstrom, because softball, especially in the bullpen, they don't get their number called as much as the baseball guys.
Definitely,
you know,
not.
A lot of times you see the pitcher, especially with Urich on the mound, go the complete 7-9 innings.
Right, that's how it usually has been going.
But then great for her to come in out of the bullpen and pitch a 3-inning shutout.
Definitely, absolutely. A really good job from her. The big play in the game for Concordia came in the 3rd inning. Aubriana Kreiser hit a 3-run homer, bringing home Jennifer Katz and then Taryn Ganstrom. Hannah Bowers had 2 RBIs in that game as well, so now we're seeing a little bit of someone kind of taking the game by the reins. And
yeah, we talked about that last episode too.
Who's going to step up?
For as good as it is to have everyone hit, there also has got to be games when your hitters hit.
Absolutely.
Your big names hit.
Yep. And then in the second game, that 8-3 win, Kaylee Dennison pitched that whole game, struck out 5, and then gave up just 3 runs on 7 hits.
There you go.
Again, kind of bunching up the runs a little bit. In a 7-inning game, we scored 4 runs in the 3rd, 2 runs in the 4th, and 2 runs in the 5th. Nothing for the other 4. So just, you know, another one of those little themes that's coming out of the games.
Yeah.
And then moving on to that Midland series against, you know, Midland, the Warriors are number 22 in the country. So us being unranked, you'd be happy coming in getting a win off of that, which
for
is
sure
exactly what they did. It was a very low-scoring series, a kind of a pitcher's duel in both games.
Okay.
2-0 in the first game for a win, and then 1-0 loss in the second. So I guess in that first game, there were only 2 runs. Taryn Ganstrom batted in Delaney Voschel in the second inning, and then Jennifer Katz stole home in the 3rd.
Oh, and man, I would have loved to be there. I love when people steal home.
Yeah, and then on the box score there, it didn't say error or anything by it.
Yeah,
so I think she just straight up.
Did they have was the ball put in play, or was it just a actual steal of home? Because a lot of times you'll see like steal home and I don't know, you did like a safety squeeze or a suicide squeeze. But yeah, what does it say on the box score there?
So it says,
because it can be sometimes a runner on third base just takes advantage of a pitcher or who have you, the catcher, whatever, being laissez-faire on the mound in their transition, and then they go and if they're fast enough, they'll steal home.
Yeah, okay, it looks like there might have been a double steal happening.
Double steal.
So it says Kreiser stole second, Katz stole home.
Yep, so
they were trying to throw Kreiser out at second, and then Katz ended up catching him a little bit off
guard. That's a good small ball, especially when you got someone at third who's got speed. But in order for this to work, you kind of need somebody on first who they know is a threat to steal, something the catcher's thinking about, like, hey, you know, if this girl goes, I'm going to have to gun her down. And then guns her down, and as soon as you see that ball leave the catcher's hand, the girl from third is heading home, and that's going to be a run.
And the best thing about it is neither of them got out.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
So Katz got home, and then Kreiser made it safely to second.
That's good, too, considering who you're playing and considering the type of game they were playing. You're playing number 22 ranked Midland.
Yeah, these aren't any bums in the infield.
But, you know, you have good pitching. They're number 22 ranked. They're probably going to have good pitching.
Yep.
You got to manufacture every run that you can get, so that's a good sign.
And I like them taking risks in that game.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes you want to play it safe when you're playing a good team, but they're stealing home.
Yeah, stealing home.
So love to see that.
Fortune favors the bold.
Definitely. So Megan had a pretty good game this time around. She struck out 4, had no walks, and gave up 8 hits, no runs. Then moving on to that final game of the series, this is where Midland's pitcher kind of showed up and showed out. 1-0 win. She pitched a no-hitter.
Oh, you're kidding. We got no hit?
Yeah, she walked 2. But then,
okay, so it wasn't a perfect game.
Not quite a perfect game, but it was interesting. She only struck out 1 throughout the whole game, but pitched a no-hitter.
Man, that's interesting.
So her pitches were just hard ones to hit. We were flying out a lot, but
yeah. Putting the ball in play, but obviously not great contact.
Definitely. Well, then you even look at Kaylee. She pitched a fantastic game as well. Just five hits, one run given, one walk.
That stinks, man.
Gives up just one run, and like you said, that's softball. You get the loss for a one-run game.
Yeah, it's a fickle thing. I know there's debates in the baseball community, I'm sure the softball community too, on whether wins and losses should be pitcher stats. Because a lot of times that's held against you.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a pitcher and you got a losing record, it's like, well, you know what? Offense got to help me out.
Right.
I held him to one run.
Yeah. And you can kind of see that bared out in the win-loss record for Kaylee and Megan. So Kaylee's got a 7-2 record. So she's doing great statistically.
With this loss.
And she's certainly been a fantastic pitcher this season.
For sure.
But Megan has also been a fantastic pitcher this season.
And Megan's the day one starter.
And she's 6-6.
Yeah, that stinks.
So you'd like to see them maybe a little bit more even on those win losses.
That's funny.
But like we were saying, our hitting is very suspect in the first game of the series usually.
Yeah, no, that's weird, dude. Maybe there's a conspiracy on the softball team. Maybe Megan Urich.
No one likes Megan.
Yeah,
so
Megan did something wrong in the off season.
So now they're trying to get her.
She showed up late
record.
To one too many workouts. Maybe she had the coach made the team do conditioning. Mm-hmm. So now she's paying for it.
Yep, she is paying for it with her record.
Yep,
but
gotta set your alarm.
I mean, regardless, despite what her record might say, her performances.
Yeah, her performance is great.
As a whole, this season have been fantastic. You know, she 400 career strikeouts.
Yep.
She is usually our number one pitcher, so
she has been as advertised this season.
Don't read too much into those records. You can read into Kaylee's record all you want. She's been fantastic this season, and her record thankfully reflects
it. Yeah, you'll get two different answers. I'm sure if you go to the softball locker room, you ask Kaylee, and she'll be like, yeah, record is a pitching stat.
It's a great stat.
It's a testament
it's my
to my
favorite
season.
One.
And then you go out, talk to Megan, she'd be like, I gotta have some offensive help a little bit.
A little bit. It's a dumb stat.
That's funny.
But yeah, moving on to, well, I guess we'll talk about, I guess, their upcoming games. They've got two today, actually. So we're recording this on Friday, April 4th. They're going to be in Sioux Center, Iowa, to play Northwestern.
Ooh.
So they'll be in Iowa, I guess just the 2 days. Yeah, Northwestern College at 6-8 today.
Represent.
GPAC matchup.
6-8? They're starting a game at 8?
Yes, 8 p.m.
What is this, the NBA?
Something like that.
Wow.
No indoor facility, though. At least I don't think so.
I think
maybe.
Dort has the indoor. Dort's got that really big bubble.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
I don't think Northwestern does.
It's at the ASB Sports Complex.
Yeah, Google Maps.
Oh, it is inside.
Oh, cool.
Never mind, then. Oh, it's a joint venture of Dort University and City of Sioux Center. So I guess
is this Northwestern? Oh, so they just went to Dort's.
Yeah.
Because Dort, I know they like built it technically, but it's kind of co-owned with the city. They got like a YMCA vibe out of it.
Gotcha. But yeah, no, it says on the schedule here, Northwestern in Sioux Center, Iowa.
Interesting. All right.
So, yeah, when I saw Northwestern, I assumed they'd be in Orange City, but
nothing better than beating the Red Raiders in front of a bunch of Dort fans.
In Dort's house, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's get a sweep there.
So good luck to them.
Yeah.
And then moving on to baseball, they've had a couple games since
baseball
our last
has
episode.
Had a couple games, and they have done well for themselves. Four games since we've last talked, and they've gone 4-0. Spoiler alert. Newest ranking, we are number 17 in the
nation.
We're number 22. But first, let's break it down game by game. Waldorf. Doubleheader last Friday, March 28th. That was my sister's birthday. Happy birthday, Evan. I'd never forget. I always forget how old she is. So she's around 19.
I do that with my little brother,
yeah,
too.
She's,
like, are you 13 or 14, maybe 15?
All I care is that she's still younger than me, and she has not caught up to me yet.
And that is not going to change either.
this was Concordia's home opener. Game one, 15-9 win. It was super gusty. I was at this game. Gusts were up to 25 mile an hour, so you had the Seward special going on up in the jet streams. Waldorf got the lead in the top of the first. Solo home run. This was their last lead of the day throughout, 14 innings of baseball. It wasn't 16 innings because the second game they got run ruled. So 14 innings of baseball, they had that one lead in the top of the first of game one. Christian Gutierrez had the mound, friend of the show. He had traffic on the bases all day, but he pitched around it. I mean, this was a tough, tough game because every single was a double, every double was a home run. Pop-outs were fly-outs. Fly-outs were out of the stadium. So for Christian Gutierrez to go six-inning pitch, he gave up 10 hits, but only four of them came around to score, and he struck out five. Here's the key, though. Didn't walk anybody. So he gets the win, 5-2, because his offense picked him up. All in all, there were seven home runs in Game 1.
Wow.
Concordia was responsible for four of them. Tanner Tompkins, Bradley Hollick, which we'll mention him later. Matthew Rhodes got into one. Bronx Lewis, they all went yard at one apiece. The key to this game, and this was something that I was talking to Coach Dupick afterwards, if you want to read the article about this game, because something else happens in Game 2 that's very historic. But the key to this series, especially on a very windy day, was walks. Because this is something Coach Dupick said. Basically, every fly ball, you get into the jet stream, it's gone.
Yep.
So it's a matter of how many runners you have on the bases when those balls do leave the yard.
So is it the idea that you can give up a one-run home run?
Yeah, yeah.
But you can't afford to put two guys, unnecessarily on the bases.
Perfectly put. Perfectly put. Solo shots won't kill you. Justin right. Verlander made a career off this. Like, the only runs he would give up is solo shots. Concordia, we walked 11 times. Waldorf, none.
Wow.
We didn't walk a single Waldorf batter in Game 1.
Would it be harder to not walk someone when it's that windy? Like, is your pitch going to go all over the place? See, or is it not as affected by the wind?
That's interesting. I doubt it's wind as much as it's, like, altitude. Because I know a lot of the times when you talk about people who are, like, playing in Denver, Mile High City,
yep.
There's a lot more break, or a lot less break to the pitches. Like, especially if you throw a curveball, it's going to drop a bit more than it would at sea level. I don't know, though. I'm sure the wind has some effect because it was windy. It was windy.
It was.
Like you couldn't keep your hat on without putting your hand on it type windy. So Jordan Jordahl stood out in this one. Or Jaden Jordahl. I always do that. Jaden Jordahl stood out in this game. He didn't have a home run, but he went 3-for-4 with four RBIs. He doubled twice. He stole a base and he walked. And that effort was really echoed by the entire offense. Notable, though, Jaden Quinn, who is on the home run watch in Game 1,
yep.
Didn't have a hit. Walked three times, didn't have a hit. So that's not going to help your home run case.
No, it's not. It'll help the team, but it'll not going to help you individually.
However, we go to Game 2.
Ooh.
It was still very windy. In this game, there weren't as many. There were six homers. However, five of the homers were via Concordia.
Nice.
Bradley Hollick homered again. Welch got into one. Jaden Quinn went yard. But first, let's talk about the pitching. Micah Sweetin, freshman out of California. 4 2/3 innings pitched, 6 hits, 1 earned run. He walked 3, struck out 4. He got the win, so he actually kept the base paths pretty clear and didn't give up a long ball. I think our only long ball was given up late in the game when we had a bunch of relievers come in because we were ahead by a lot. We win this game 21-5.
Ooh,
I think I forgot to say this. Yeah, we went 21-5, got run ruled, so only went 7 innings. Here's the real story of the game.
I'm doing some math in my head. You mentioned so five home runs total, and I'm only...
We had three players hit home runs. We had five home runs. Something's not right. Here's the rest of the story. Keep in mind, Jaden Quinn is at 85 home runs heading into this series. I'll just read this excerpt. I feel like I put it pretty well in the article, so I'll just read this excerpt from my article. Quinn opened the game with possibly the best 3 innings a Concordia Bulldog has ever had. In the bottom of the game's opening frame, Quinn crushed a solo shot to left to put the Bulldogs up 1-0, number 86 on his career. In the second, Quinn again homered down the left field line to put Concordia up 5-0, number 87. And in the third, Jaden lofted a ball into the jet stream and let the Seward breeze do the rest. A 3-run bomb to left center, number 88, he tied the record.
Wow.
So, Joey Gabranski, eat your heart out. Jaden Quinn went 3-for-3, 3 home runs, 5 RBIs, and the best at-bat of the day, I would argue, was his final. It was an intentional walk. In the bottom of the fifth, there was one out. Nobody was on. He gets walked.
They put him on first.
Hey, I mean, I'd rather have a guy on first than a guy rounding the bases, so yeah. I see the logic.
Oh, okay. A walk doesn't affect your hitting percentage, right?
No.
It doesn't count as anything?
It affects your on-base percentage.
Okay.
So still good for his stats.
Yeah.
But it doesn't count as an at-bat.
Gotcha.
It's a plate appearance, not an at-bat, but then you get into the complexities of baseball statistics, which
right.
we don't have the time for today.
And, okay, quick question about that record. Is Joey Garansky's record still the national record?
No. Okay. Interesting enough, there is I heard something about in Cumberland, Kentucky, I think, who is at like 102.
What?
He got his first 2 years, he was just kind of like an average power hitter. So, you know, he gets like 15 to 20 long balls a year. His junior year, which was last year, he hit like 36.
Oh, my God.
Which, mind you, last year, Jaden Quinn at 27. So this is a massive number, and he's just been on a crazy streak. So he broke. So Joey Gabranski, you have break the record, which was 79 the last year. And then this year, you've had Jaden Quinn break that record and tie Gabranski's record. And you got this guy in Cumberland who became the first NAIA player ever to reach 100 home runs.
Wow.
He's already at 100 home runs this season with like half the season left to play.
Dang, that sucks for Jaden.
It sucks for Jaden. He's going to have the school record, mind
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
But and he can still chase that 100 home run plateau. But, yeah, you just got it. Got you had a guy get hot at the wrong time.
That'd be nuts for, you know, NAIA has been around for a long time.
A minute, yeah.
And you have a guy break the 80 mark one season ago. And that's the national record.
And that was a record that 79 number was posted in 2003. 2005.
So 20-year record.
So it stood for 20 years.
And then
Gabranski breaks it.
The year after that, we're going to maybe have two players.
Quinn eclipses
100.
It. 100? Yeah. Quinn's on track for 100.
So we're just going straight from 79's your record for 20 years to we're going to have two players break it by 25.
Juice balls. Torpedo bats.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a steroid. Maybe the NAIA will have a steroid epidemic.
I think we need to do some drug tests on both of these players.
Yeah, we're gonna have to testify before Congress. They're gonna be playing our podcast.
You're like, well, yeah.
see what the people have to say about the home run epidemic in the NAIA.
It's nuts.
Anyways, Jaden Quinn had a really cool attitude about it. I was interviewing him after the game because you got to interview the guy that tied the record.
Right.
He said he was rounding the bases on his third home run. He didn't even know it. He said he thought it was like 85 or something.
He doesn't even know his own stats.
And then the announcer said it was 88, and he was like, oh.
we know his stats better than he does.
Because I was talking to him. I asked this to both Dupik and Jaden Quinn. And I was like, so is there any extra motivation? Because you're chasing Gabranski. You're chasing your former teammate, right?
Right.
And he's like, Dupik said this and Jaden said this. It's like Gabranski was the numbers guy. He could, before every game, he'd tell you his average. He could tell you how many home runs he's got hit to beat the program mark, the career mark, all these different records he had like memorized. Jaden Quinn just kind of goes with the flow. He's like, I hit 88 home runs today. Didn't even know when he was rounding the bases.
He's like, oh, I just swing the bat.
On his third home run of the day. He did say it was really cool. My favorite quote from the interview, I was like, also, you got to tell us, because not a lot of people that have lived on the planet Earth have had this experience. How does it feel to be intentionally walk with the bases empty? And and he's like, I'm not going to say I'm quite at Barry Bonds level yet. But it feels good. It feels good. So
I think the steroids will get him there.
We can't escape the steroid argument now. We gotta get away from this. Okay, but also worthy of note in this game, last note from this game, Quinn got the headline. Halleck, to this point, has homered 6 times in his last 6 games.
Wow.
Going back to that Northwestern series.
So he's kind of staking his claim as a power hitter as well.
His claim, yep. That brings us to the Briarcliff doubleheader, which was Monday the 31st. Game one, we take a break from the gaudy offensive numbers because that was a 1-0 win, but that doesn't mean the stat sheet wasn't stuffed by Alex Johnson. Grad, senior, coming back to play another year. He goes a 7 innings pitched, complete game shutout, only
nice.
Give up 2 hits, only walked 3, and he struck out 13. That guy's got crazy strikeout numbers.
Yeah, he does.
Got the win. He's 4-2 on the season. Ty Nikolajczyk scored the go-ahead run in the bottom of the 5th with a single up the middle that scored Zachary Day. A little bit of small ball. Day came on to pinch run for Jimmy Blumberg. He got to second on a sack bunt by Cade Vanis, and then Ty did the rest with the single. Ty went 2-for-3 with that one RBI, the game-winning RBI in the 5th inning. Brings us to game 2, which was a 9-1 win, so back to the comfortable blowouts. Braxton Greenberg near shutout, and he one-hit Briarcliff. 6 1/3 innings pitched, 1 hit, 1 run, no earned runs, 1 walk, 8 strikeouts. So I can't give him the shutout because he gave up a run, but there was no earned runs because it scored on an error.
Okay.
However, don't feel too bad for Braxton just yet. Greenberg himself committed the throwing error.
Oh, no.
In the first inning, which allowed the runner on third to score. So it was an earned, unearned run. This is something, if we're talking about the nitty-gritty of baseball statistics, so usually when a player commits an error and that allows a run to score, for the pitcher's sake, it's an unearned run. However, I am in the camp that if the pitcher commits the error, it should still be an earned run.
That would make sense.
It makes sense logically to me. But for Greenberg's case, we'll take the no earned runs.
Yes, I'm sure it doesn't happen quite enough for it to be a big enough deal.
Yeah, but it's just a little something to note. Also something to note, Brad Hollick continues his crazy streak. In game one, he didn't homer. Remember, the only one was Ty Nikolajczyk's RBI single. Game two, though, 2 for 3, 6 RBIs. He walked once, and he homered twice.
Wow.
That, my friend, is 8 home runs in his last 8 games. He has homered in 6 of those games, but in 2 of those games, he's had 2 home runs in those games.
That is crazy consistent.
It's like, yeah. It's
it's looking good as the GPAC schedule's heating up.
I mean, yeah, it's the right time to get hot. And also, talking about streaks, that's a 7-game win streak for Concordia.
Sweet.
Good for them. Right in the middle of the GPAC conference season, Jaden Quinn, homer tracker, is at 15 on the season. Is tied at 88 with Joey Gabranski. He needs one more to beat his buddy, and he needs 12 more to have triple digits. Would be the second only ever NAIA player of all time.
He is likely gonna get that 100. He is certainly gonna get that.
He's on pace.
Record.
Yeah. He's gonna get the program record. He's on pace to get 100 home runs. He can't get the record though because this guy in Cumberland, Kentucky, is just. I guess he's out there with a fungo bat.
it's crazy. He's hitting tennis balls here.
Yeah, no, he is. It's what it seems like he's doing. Next game up was supposed to be today versus Morningside, but winds got a bit gusty. It got a little bit colder than 45 degrees, perhaps a drizzle. So they did the reasonable thing and postponed. So,
I mean, you wouldn't want the players to melt out there.
I mean, come on, guys. We can't be expected to play in this weather.
Not in these conditions where people are walking around in shorts outside.
Right. So at some point this coming week, or maybe this weekend, they will play Morningside. We don't know when it's been scheduled to yet. While Morningside is unranked, they are second in the GPAC in standings. They have a 9-3 conference record, which matches ours. And they actually have a better winning percentage overall at 22-6-1. So not a team to be taken lightly. But that's all we got for baseball. So a little bit of record breaking, a little bit of statements being made. We had some statements being made. I don't know. Do you want to do powerlifting first or track?
Sure, we can just touch on powerlifting a little bit.
Yeah, do the powerlifting because this is cool.
Yeah, so we've got powerlifting nationals currently underway. The first day was yesterday. We'll be going all through this weekend. But just a quick little thing from that meet, I guess.
Yeah, it's not over yet.
It is not over.
We'll give it a full breakdown next week's podcast.
But they kind of go weight by weight, so you only compete on one day, really.
Yeah.
So you do your squat. Okay, powerlifting is the squat, bench, deadlift.
Squat, bench, the big three.
And then they just add your totals together, and there's your score. So
best scoring system in all of sports.
It's very simple.
Very simple.
Lift the weight, three things.
Lift the weight, you get the number.
Yep. No controversy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in this collegiate thing, there's no classes or divisions. So we're going against D1s, D2s, D3s.
That's right.
NAIA. And our Riley Ladd of Concordia University, it's never polite to ask a woman her weight.
You never mention a lady's weight
but
in public, Kai.
We're not
especially
asking,
not on a podcast.
We're not asking. We're just saying because it says it right here on the results sheet.
Okay, it's fine then.
52 kg, which I'll,
American, please.
I'll translate into freedom units for all of us.
Thank you.
It is roughly 115 pounds.
Buck 15?
Yep. So just keep this in mind as I go through some of these totals. 115 pounds. Actually, wait, no. That's her weight class. She actually weighed 50.8.
Which is?
112.
So she
weighs
lighter.
112 pounds.
Is it the smallest weight class?
They go all the way to 44.
Which would that be like sub 100?
It'd be 97.
Ooh,
yep.
Wow. That's some 97-pound powerlifters out there.
Yep. So we've got 112 pounds, essentially. Her squat, 137.5 kg, which translates to 303 pounds.
Three times her body weight.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
We go to her bench.
Oh, my God.
97.5 kg. That's 215.
You're kidding.
She weighs 112, and she's almost putting two plates on the bar for
That's
bench.
Stupid, dude. Two plates is a 112-pounder.
And then we go to her deadlift, 150 kg. She's 115 pounds, pulling 330.
Goodness, great. That actually is close to three times her body weight.
Yeah. Crazy numbers. To give her a grand total of 385, which is, if we round up a pound, 850 pounds.
I think that's a pretty good score. Do they have the standings on where she's at? Because, I mean, she's got to be pretty high with the numbers like that.
Oh, she's first. National champ. That's why we're talking about her, national champion.
I was about to say, like, I can't imagine any other 112-pounders doing that.
No, and so they have raw classes and then equipped. So equipped is you get your sleeves and your compression vest.
Your belt.
And your belts. I think they still allow belts raw, but that's pretty much it. And you're not getting the knee wraps or the
wrist wraps for deadlift.
Yeah. So she is essentially unequipped.
Unequipped.
Doing all of this.
That's crazy, dude.
It's unreal. And she's going against people from schools like Miami University, Texas A&M, Davenport, Louisiana Tech, the mighty Midland, Louisiana State. Unreal. Unreal.
Talk about them Bulldogs. Start putting us in the conversation.
Yeah, we're pretty cool.
We are
a pretty good powerlifting team.
We have the national championship. National champion for 112 pounds.
For women's raw collegiate 52 kilograms.
Yeah, so, book it.
Congrats to Riley. We'll have more coming out of this meet for the next episode. I know we'll kind of do a little breakdown of the whole thing because we've got some people who also got third and fourth who we'd love to talk about, especially because it's a national result. But for now, we'll just talk about Riley because we have to move on to track and field, who had their first meet of the. Oh, are you looking up something?
I'm just looking up things that are 330 pounds.
Oh, okay. So what can Riley Ladd deadlift?
According to the AI response that Google gives you, a South China tiger male, a South Chinese male tiger. Why did they phrase it like that? Is 330 pounds. So
she can deadlift.
You could pick up a male tiger, about as heavy as a panda bear. Panda bear weighs 330 pounds.
Look up 215. What can Riley Ladd bench?
Well, she could probably bench you, huh?
She could certainly bench me.
You're a skinny guy.
I am certainly not 215. She could bench that. Me plus some.
Things that are
215. Me plus my dog and my cat.
How about a kangaroo?
Oh,
a beer keg. It puts Panda Bear on here twice, so maybe a
She's probably fun at parties.
a reindeer, an octopus, and that's it.
So if we stick an octopus on a bar, Riley Ladd can bench it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow, there's a lot of things that weigh 250
pounds. Might need to break into the zoo and test this one out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll bring a beer keg over. Should it be a... She's great for keg stands.
Yeah.
Well, no, that'd be a... No.
You know what? She would be perfect. Have you seen those Oktoberfest videos from Germany?
Oh, dude. Oh, like my God.
Who carry all the beer.
Think about the
beer steins.
So she is 112 pounds. And I think what's more impressive about the deadlift thing is you have to have the grip strength because this is unequipped. So you don't get the wrist wraps, which I don't think you do. I could be wrong. They may give you belt and wrist wraps, and that may be the minimum. But still, that is impeccable grip strength on a 112-pound frame. To pick up 330 pounds, she would be great at Oktoberfest.
She would be perfect.
We need a Lederhosen this instant. Because have you seen those videos? They have like
yeah,
eight,
they have like they have so many of them.
Yeah. So she's definitely got some. What's her last name? Ladd?
Yep.
I think there's some German in there.
Yep. Well, certainly some Irish in there.
Oh,
and,
yeah. There's
and Germans and Irish know how to party.
Yeah, those Eastern Europeans.
They know their beer.
And weightlifting, apparently.
Apparently.
Okay.
So, now moving on from lifting heavy things to running
strength
things very fast.
Yeah.
We have got track and field with the opening meet of the 2025 outdoor season. And this was the long name meet, the meet with long of a name, the UNK Hastings College Central Nebraska Challenge.
I think we settled on Central Nebraska Challenge.
Yep, at Kearney, Nebraska, right, Kearney High School in Kearney, Nebraska. We had some pretty good results, especially for it being the first meet of the season. It was good enough that we are just going to be talking about the champions and the runners-up.
Do it.
So, third place is not good enough to make it on the podcast this week.
Not today.
And then we also had some national qualifying standards that we'll talk about in a little bit as well. But to start with the event champions, we had Hannah Bintema, 3K steeplechase champion. Her time was 13 minutes, 6.64 seconds. Then we've got our favorite
race. Is this Johnny Juergen?
Johnny Juergen did not compete at this meet.
Are you kidding?
But
I guess he deserves a break. He just came back from Nationals.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and the
Johnny Juergen's apprentice.
Pretty much.
The Padawan. Who is he?
It is Luke Humang.
Okay.
And we have upped the distance from 3K to 5K.
5K race walk.
So, sorry to everyone who's watching a track meet and doesn't like the race walk, because you're watching it for 28 minutes and 36 seconds before you see a winner.
I can't think of a better way to spend 28 minutes and 36 seconds.
I mean, besides listening to the podcast.
Besides listening to the podcast. Well, you like could do both.
That'd be a great use
of your
time.
You could do both and just transcend to a greater plane of existence.
This is like Nirvana.
You're watching Talking Dogs and watching race walk.
Fantastic. My God. We might need to try that sometime.
Hey, there's
we just listen to our own.
That's my weekend plans.
Pretty much. Yeah, they'll be having some race walking here tomorrow.
There you go. Book it.
Perfect. And then we had Kayla Kirchner in the 400, 57.96. First place, Kiki Nianuk in the long jump, 19 feet, 3.5 inches. And then Adriana Rodenzel, 100 meter hurdles, 13.45 seconds. Took the gold in that event.
She's back in the saddle, everyone.
She is back indeed. Then we get the runner-ups, and Rodenzel is once again on the podium, this time in the 4x1. So the 4x100-meter relay, total time was 48.01 seconds, and that featured Cambria Saunders, Kayla Kirchner, Emily Losecki, and then Adriana Rodenzel. We also then had Lydia Edmonds, also in that 3K steeplechase, so we took 1 and 2 in that event, 13 minutes, 39.05 seconds. Addison McCarter in the, this is the long jump, 11.88 meters. And we had Cole Yunker in the 3K steeplechase, 10 minutes, 54.02 seconds. I'm sorry, that Addison McCarter, not long jump. That would be a world record by twice. that's the triple jump. I just looked at that number and realized my mistake.
Wow.
12 meters in the long jump.
Yeah,
not quite.
Hey, shout out to Beisel for finding the diamond in the rough there.
For real. But I believe this one's the triple jump.
Okay,
we've good. Got Sam Olson in the 5K race walk. He came in second, so we took 1 and 2 in that one as well. 30 minutes 36.27 seconds. Mason Ostermeyer came in second in that pole vault, 16 feet 6.75 inches. Only got beat by a UNK guy, so D2. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter for GPAC and Nationals.
Yep.
And then Nathan Baldwin in the discus throw, 172 feet 10 inches. Then we also had some national qualifiers. Baldwin got the A standard.
Good.
With that discus throw. Mason Ostermeyer, he got that A standard in the pole vault. Then we had Connor Ash in the hammer throw. He did not, you know, win or get second in his event, but he still got the B standard for Nationals.
We'll take it.
180 feet, 10 inches. Matthew Boyer in the javelin got the B standard, 195 feet, 9 inches. Abigail Gerber in the shot put, 46 feet, 2.75 inches. And then our top competitor from indoor Nationals, Abby Wolgemuth, she's... The throws are a little bit different outdoor and indoor,
yep,
just because you have more space to work with. She is now onto the hammer throw.
Hammer throw.
I believe she got third place, but she got that B standard of 169 feet, 5 inches. So, yeah, really good to see from them. And for those of you who don't know how the A and B standard works, A standard means you're automatically qualified.
You are going to Nashville.
For sure. And then each team, they basically get an allotment of 3 B standards to take to Nationals every year. So you could take 3 pole vaulters, you could take 3 400 runners, you could take a race walker,
whatever,
a hammer thrower, and a discus thrower.
Whatever Beisel decides.
You can do whatever you want. It's up to the coach. So A is the only way to guarantee it, but if you're one of the top people, in the country and you get the B standard, coach would be wise to take you.
Yes,
it
for
just
sure.
becomes an issue when you have a bunch of people who are getting the B standard and are all really good.
Which we might.
We very well might. But you'd hope that all four of these athletes who got the B, at this point in the first meet of the season, they can get that up to the A standard by nationals time. I'm rooting for them all. I'm sure they'll get it. And they've got a meet coming up, like I mentioned, tomorrow. Starts at 12 p.m. It's here at Bulldog Stadium. So show up and show out for our Bulldog track and field athletes.
Yeah.
They're certainly putting on a show, especially in that 5K race walk. We'll see if Johnny Jerkin can make his outdoor
debut.
The Seward High School product, the freshman.
Seward?
The Blue Jay. See what he can do.
Yeah, that'll be exciting.
Very exciting. Looking forward to it. Unfortunately, I won't be there because we got a spring game.
You're kidding.
I'm very sad about it.
Well, sometimes in life, Kai, there are decisions, tough decisions that had to be made. I think you are at one of those junctures now.
Saying I should be sick tomorrow.
I'm just
saying. And not get on the van.
I'm just saying you should consider all the possible outcomes
here.
It
is true. Spring game. What would I rather do, play Creighton or watch Johnny Jerkin in the race walk?
That's for you to decide. But with that, that'll be all for this episode of Talking Dogs. Be sure to stay tuned in the future for weekly podcasts on the CU and East Sower website and on Spotify. From Cohen Carpenter and Kai Ulbrich and everybody at the CU and East Sower newspaper, have a good day and go Dogs!